everyone. It is Monday, November 18th. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, Bob Page here for another exciting edition of No Filter Sports. A lot going on today. So much football. Michigan, Michigan State, the Lions, the NFL. What is pass interference? On and on it goes. So much to talk about. And by the way, we will be talking to former Spartan. Can I call Keith Nichol a Spartan great? Is that fair to
yes,
say?
Yes, he is a great.
Well, I don't think Keith was a, and he'd be the first to admit, a great wide receiver at Michigan State, but he authored, along with Kirk Cousins, one of the greatest plays in the entire history of Michigan State football that they'll still be talking about long after we're gone.
I'm just so impressed with him.
I am too.
In that the guy goes to Oklahoma to be a quarterback, and he winds up playing behind Sam Bradford, who only goes on to win the Heisman Trophy. Comes to Michigan State near his hometown of Lowell, Michigan, not near but in the same state, and he runs into Kirk Cousins, who, as we've seen in the last 4 or 5 weeks, has been an amazing NFL quarterback and certainly one of the highest paid quarterbacks in history. So he has the skill set to become a wide receiver and does a pretty good job, and there were games where he threw touchdown passes and caught passes too. And in fact, his ingenuity as this play against Wisconsin in the that sent Michigan State to the Big Ten title game, where he lateraled in the middle of the play, is an indication of the type of athlete that he was.
Cousins, far side, well caught. Nichol, he handed it off. Touchdown! What a play! Keith Nichol, awareness, 99!
So anyway, we'll talk to Keith at around about an hour
in
the show.
Yeah, don't forget his academic achievements, too.
True, too. Yeah, Denny's right.
Three years in a row.
Yeah, academic All-American.
Yeah, and he's apparently some kind of prominent financial advisor now in Metro Detroit, and he ain't going to be happy about what we all saw Saturday in Ann Arbor.
Right. I was with him at a event at the Polish Cultural Center on Thursday night. And
our guys.
And, you know, we just didn't, you know. Michigan, as you said, Bob, you were the most convinced more than anybody that it was going to be a blowout, and it certainly was. But, you know, you never know. State could have played better, and things could have gone a certain way.
They can't play better. They're not any good.
It's a precipitous, a steep dive, a precipitous collapse for Mark D'Antonio. Because Michigan State, I mean, nobody can deny what D'Antonio did, what he came in here and did with those 3 straight years of 11 wins, including 12 and 15. He gets into the CFP playoff. 3 conference titles in 6 years, but the last 3 have been awful. He's 24-24 since the start of 16. So it's a mystery. Is it a mystery to you? Anybody here? What's happened to D'Antonio?
You know what,
talked about that on the last show. Go ahead, Denny.
And some of the things that he said after the ball game, I didn't think were appropriate. I don't think he really meant the way it came out, but he used the term "we" all the time. We all the time. We all the time. He did not refer at all to the coaching that has been lacking. We got kids who just. They missed so many tackles with this ball game Saturday. It looked like touch football at one time. It really did. So I just wonder where all the fundamentals have gone.
It's not a typical
Dan Antonio team. It just isn't.
Lack of discipline. It's 4th and 1, a false start, then a block punt. And as a Michigan, just say this before you go, Bob. As a Michigan guy, I take no joy in this at all. I'd like to see the two teams competitive. You know, so many great Spartans out there that just deserve better at this point. They had their run. It was a great run, and they enjoyed it. But to see it collapse this fast is pretty shocking.
Okay, let's get real about this. Did you guys see when they fonted the graphic on television, or did you see on the internet the injury list for this game? Michigan had 1 player out. Michigan State has like 20 or 25, mm-hmm. and it's among their very best players. This is not just for the Michigan game. Right. It's happened all year. I'm going to cut D'Antonio a whole bunch of slack on that. This team would have been far better, still not as good as Michigan, but far better than it was had it not been for all these injuries. And the other thing is, I touched on this the last show, the recruiting luck simply ran out on these guys. They can't beat Michigan. They can't beat Notre Dame or Ohio State for 5-star kids. So D'Antonio and his staff lived for years on the 2-star kids nobody wanted. Le'Veon Bell, a 2-star high school player out of where? Columbus, Ohio. Ohio State didn't want him. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins, two stars out of West Michigan. They didn't want him, but D'Antonio is a great coach, as we know. They coached those kids up, and they made them stars, and they had tremendous success. And by the way, in the wake of what happened Saturday, disaster though it was for Michigan State, what it means is D'Antonio is now 8-4 against Michigan in mm-hmm. his last 12 games, okay? He won't be back next year, I don't think. But, you know, there was an interesting story, I thought, among many interesting stories in the Detroit News over the weekend and the Free Press. Here's a headline, a story written by Alan Trio. Can Michigan State pry Abdur-Rahman Yassin from Northwestern's grip? This is what I'm talking about. Now, Yassin, he's a really good wide receiver from Walled Lake Western in suburban Detroit. You think Michigan wanted him? No. You think he would have gone to Michigan if Michigan did want him? Yes. How about Ohio State? Now, this kid might become a great player for Michigan State, but this is what they have to do. They're recruiting these slightly lesser lights that big boys don't want.
Can't argue with that. So maybe this is what Urban Meyer said a few weeks ago was unfair. He said during one of those halftime things he does, you watch Michigan State play, how many NFL players do they got? That doesn't look like the defenses I used to go against. They had first-round corners. They had Le'Veon Bell. I don't see that. That's coaches recruiting.
Joe Bachy is the leader of the defense. Yeah. He's suspended for drug use. He didn't, you know what I'm saying? I mean, again, you go back, all these guys, the injuries and all the stuff that's happened. But Urban's right. Urban was right.
First of all, injuries are a part of the game. Don't start making excuses because guys are hurt. It happens.
I'm not
it
making
happens.
Excuses.
It happens
I'm
all the time.
Fact.
Well, you did bend it back a little bit. But you know what? I said it at the beginning. The talent, it just isn't there with the Michigan State football team. You said it yourself just a few seconds ago. So if you don't have the talent and you've got a number of injuries, what happens? You get blown out by a Michigan team, which isn't the greatest football power in the world anymore.
Well, what Bob said, and I'm somewhere in the middle there, because what he said is true. He has to coach up the 2- and 3-star guys. But here's so regardless of what we think, from the fan standpoint, they don't care about the mitigating
right.
circumstances. They don't
You're
care
right.
about the 2- and 3-stars. They don't care about any of that. This one tweet of many that I saw goes, I'm not ungrateful. I will never forget the things Mark D'Antonio brought to MSU, historic games, 3 Big Ten championships, Rose Bowl, win, playoff berth. I will treasure those memories forever. I'm also not delusional. He is not the coach he used to be, and it's sad to see.
Tired and beaten down. Another headline from the Detroit News
yes.
on Sunday, and I quote, we ain't folding. Spartans yeah. vow to keep fighting after latest beatdown. They fought only in the first half on Saturday. They did fold after that, and it was disgraceful. You know, somebody asked me the other day what I thought about Michigan State's football problems. I just told you that again. And it's just to see this team the second half go out and essentially quit on D'Antonio. And I also want to talk about, I've been talking about it all year, how overrated Brian Lewerke is, how Michigan State's coaches overvalued him, just as they did Andrew Maxwell, you'll remember, replacing mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins when he left a few years ago. It's just been a nightmare. And the thing about it is they still got a chance to go to a bowl game. Any guess on what the attendance will be if Michigan State wins its last two?
12
games. The attendance will be this Saturday
12 people.
At Piscataway for the big one.
Michigan State
at Rutgers, folks. And then mighty Maryland invades East Lansing for the season finale. How many people rattling around Spartan Stadium for that one?
It's not,
and that gets the attention of administrators real fast.
It's not Michigan State's fault. That's more of the absurdity of what's happened to college football, where it's all about money, all about ratings, all about TV exposure, that they would let these two clown football teams into the Big Ten.
And those are schedules that are put together a couple of years in advance. So, you know, you don't know how good a team is going to be a couple of years later.
We know Rutgers sucks. Rutgers is always
sucks.
If you two guys are like me, you sit in front of these games with pen and paper, and I'm jotting notes. So, and I'm doing it as I go.
He shows us his notes.
These are important.
See,
plays.
These are my notes. Look at it. I jotted notes.
Bob,
thank you, Bob,
for the
visual.
What do you think of those notes?
That's good.
Thanks, Bob.
I just said if you guys do this. So here are my 2 pages of notes from important plays I'm jotting down during the Michigan-Michigan State game as we go along. I'm not reading this crap because there were no important plays. It was an old-fashioned beatdown. It was disgusting. But there were some funny things going on, fellas. Did you see when Michigan State actually is kind of dominating in the opening quarter? You know,
they led 7-0.
They did.
At Michigan Stadium, the University of Michigan put up where the fans are going crazy and making all this noise when State's on offense. And I quote, "The Spartans need quiet to hear their plays." You think that might have egged them on a little bit more than it did? Did you see that? I broke up laughing when I saw that.
Well, the one thing we haven't done is we haven't talked about Michigan. Michigan looked pretty good. And yes, they were up against the Spartans, but Michigan looked pretty darn good. And Shea Patterson looked very, very good. A vindication, I think, of Harbaugh, vindication of Patterson, Shea Patterson, and also vindication of Josh Gattis, the offensive coordinator. I think
it's important to note he played his best game in a Michigan uniform. He completed 24 out of 33 passes, 385 yards.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
How about Ronnie Bell, by the way?
Oh, what a good
player. The three of us guarding Ronnie Bell would have had as good a chance as Michigan State did.
Yeah.
He ate them alive.
He sure did.
And, of course, as as Michigan fans would tell you, I'm really glad to see that, because after they lost to Penn State, we came in here to do our show. That was October 21st, I think. And I said, all I can think from that game is how bad I feel for that kid. Because if he had caught that pass that was right in his gut, the easiest pass he's been thrown all year long, and they tie Penn State or go for two and win, what a different conversation we'd be having today, because Michigan is really out of the Big Ten title chase now. Finally, I wasn't sure how the whole tiebreaker worked, because they could wind up, if Penn State beats Ohio State and then Michigan beats Ohio State, they would all be in the same position with the records. But the first divisional tiebreaker, and I wasn't aware of this till I read it today or yesterday, is that if those three teams are tied, according to the Big Ten, it's the records of the three tied teams will be compared based on winning percentage in games between them. And Penn State will have beaten both Michigan and Ohio State. And so they would then go to the national championship.
You'll need a mathematician to figure it out by the time it's done.
Yeah. In any case.
Now to the announcers on Saturday's game. Ladies and gentlemen, my protege at Madison Square Garden Network in New York, Detroit native Gus Johnson, was on play-by-play. And when Michigan was up 27-10 late in the third quarter, Gus said, and I'm quoting here, "Jim Harbaugh is a great, great coach." He's defending Harbaugh being there and everything like that, but he hastens to add, "No, he hasn't won a Big Ten title. No, he's 0-4 versus Ohio State. But Rome wasn't built in a day." I mean, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how have you liked the Harbaugh play so far? And I also want to single out Joel Klatt, his color commentator. First of all, I really like these guys as a team. I thought Joel Klatt was great Saturday. He anticipated everything that was going on down there in the field. There were some complex rule interpretations he told us about before the officials made them public. So, I mean, obviously, if you're a Michigan fan, it was a hugely enjoyable game to watch. But I really do like these two guys, and I don't single out color commentators like Klatt for that kind of praise too often.
Well, isn't this enough of Michigan, Michigan State?
Yeah, I want one more college football note, though. Yeah.
Not if you're a Michigan fan, Denny.
No, I think that's good. We're going to talk to Keith Nichol. We're going to try to. I'm sure he's upset today, but we'll be fair and with him later on. Tua Tagovailoa out for the year. Alabama dislocated right hip.
Done.
He goes into the game as a game time decision. Because is it an ankle? Is it an ankle?
Hip.
I think it's an ankle.
It's a hip.
Problem.
He's getting a new hip today.
The hip now. But they had 35-7. Yep. They got the backup quarterback warming up before the half, and Saban sticks with Tua, and he gets hurt. Now, why does he stick with Tua? Because the rules are so BS, I think, is part of it, that they're five and only four go to the playoff.
Right.
He's number five, so he's got to be overly impressive in terms of running up the score and everything.
He's got to score 70 points.
It's a stupid system that I think partially led to Saban's decision to keep the kid in, and now he's got no shot.
Yep. But this happens a lot, and if you noticed, after the Michigan-Michigan State game, somebody asked D'Antonio, why'd you keep Lewerke in so long? You never even went to a backup quarterback. Don't you want to look at these kids? And he said, basically, I did it because Harbaugh kept Shea in so long.
Yeah.
What if Shea had gotten hurt down the stretch in what had become a meaningless game? Yeah. It happens a lot. And, you know, the thing, reading the story about Tagovailoa, Eli, Alabama not going to make the Final Four playoff, undoubtedly, as a result. Now, does this remind you personally of any similar situation?
Well, there was
it sure does me.
Yeah, the
Dennis
kid
Franklin, who was 1973.
Right. Right. Well, how about – well, I thought you were talking about the fact that it's going to cost Tua tens of millions in the draft.
I was thinking you look at a great team like Alabama and you say, well, it doesn't have a starting quarterback. I bet the backup's good. And just as it was in 73 when Michigan State and Ohio State played to that 10-10 tie and they sent Ohio State to the game because Dennis had been knocked out and couldn't play in the Rose Bowl.
Should we get Dennis on for Ohio State week?
I'd love to have Dennis on.
Yeah, let's get this. How about Chris Spielman?
Well, Chris is pretty busy with football.
We have so many guys.
I'll try. I think Chris may turn us down. Is why I haven't.
Why would he turn us down?
Because he's busy. But I'll try him.
Give me his number. I'll call him.
Okay, I'll give you Chris's number.
By the way, did you guys also notice? I didn't think personally. This is a surprise. I haven't believed they've been that good. Minnesota finally lost its first game.
Iowa,
23-19 at Iowa, which is a very tough place to play. Always really good teams under a great head coach in Kirk Ferentz.
Yeah, it's tough to go undefeated, and they'd been undefeated. They had topped Penn State the week before. Interestingly, because Wisconsin has kind of gone to the tank a little bit, now it's between Minnesota and Wisconsin to see who wins the West. And I think
it's crazy, isn't it, the way it's bounced around?
Anyway. All right, well, I want to talk about the Lions, our Detroit Lions, your Detroit Lions.
No, your Detroit Lions, gentlemen.
And again, the baffled Bill O'Brien, coach of Houston, we'll talk about that too. But first, I got to tell you, the only way to have 20/20 near and far vision for life without glasses and contacts is safe, reliable, state-of-the-art procedures in the Aldo Eye Center, Michigan's premier eye clinic. Our listeners, both in the Drew and Mike show and our show, have had the good sense to get a free evaluation, and 100 or so have gotten one of these amazing surgeries, and their life has changed. It sets you free. Custom LASIK offered by Dr. Aldo is the most precise, gives over half his patients better than 20/20 vision. You got to have see what's better than 20/20 to understand it. I got it back when I got LASIK almost 20 years ago. By the way, that's the medical standard for perfect vision, 20/20. You can get better. Multifocal lens exchange eliminates the need for reading glasses if you're 45 and over. Get rid of those ridiculous readers for life. Find out what works for you. The evaluation is free. Get the best and pay the least. Dr. Adler will gladly beat any competing offer you may have gotten. Call him. Get the free evaluation. Got nothing to lose. 800-398-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES. Or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
And now for our good friends at Hall Financial. Hall Financial has received nearly 800 five-star reviews from their happy clients, and they're on a mission to hit 1,000 this year, 2019. This Hall team of mortgage professionals provides every client with VIP service, ensuring they feel like a name and not a number. What if I told you that you could skip a mortgage payment and lower your payment? Or if I told you that Hall Financial will walk you through the process of buying your home and provide you with a top realtor in your area? Hall Financial knows how to deliver five-star service. That means your schedule, availability at night and on weekends. They're going to work for you, and you won't be charged hidden or extra fees. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall. Call them today at 248-308-5000 if you're looking to purchase or refi, or chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. Equal housing lender, NMLS number 1467435. 248-308-5000.
And you've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. I got to give credit here to Jeff Seidel. As I told you last week,
saying what I've been saying all these years.
Yes.
That columnist, when the Lions were 2-0 to start the season, was saying, hey, this looks like it might be a different Lions team.
Don't blame him, because they did look like a different Lions team momentarily.
Not to me, they didn't.
As a reporter, okay, Bob, give him a break. As a reporter, when your team is 2-0, are you going to say, yeah, but they're going to suck soon enough, so don't cheer everybody?
Yes, that's always I'm always right.
Anyway,
I'm always right.
He goes, dear Martha Firestone Ford, this isn't acceptable.
I saw it.
Yeah. Well, I'm reading it for the other people, okay, Bob?
Okay.
For the other people. Your Detroit Lions, the organization that makes you a boatload of cash every year, sucking money out of the pockets of decent, hardworking folks who deserve better, are struggling something awful, just like always. They've lost 6 of the past 7. All hope is gone. The season is over. This isn't acceptable. Good for you, Jeff. They have lost 6 out of 7. The only team they beat I'll say Bob is your Detroit, mine and your Detroit Giants.
You're giving this guy credit. I wasn't even going to mention this
I'm
column
giving
on the
him
show.
Credit for being.
I've been saying the same. I was saying the same thing on the Detroit airwaves when I worked there 30, 35 years ago.
That's why you got fired.
The light bulb comes on.
That's why you got fired.
Oh, sell team.
He doesn't want to get fired. He didn't want to get fired, but he's allowed to say it today.
Listen, okay. If you want to protest a football game, don't go to the game. Don't watch it on TV. The advertisers sooner or later will know. The ball club will sooner or later know that if people don't show up and put their butts in the seats, that they're very unhappy. But the Lion fans, with all due respect, they've never done that. They've never gone out on strike. I mean, look at what happened this year with the Detroit Tigers. Nobody showed up, for God's sakes. We could count the people in the ballpark the last time I went down there.
One of the differences, they play 81 home games, and the Lions only play 8, and so it's the only game in town.
But it's not an excuse to lose every year.
I agree. And that's what Alex Karras said years ago.
Yeah.
Just don't go. But people continue to go because – you're
right. They're not going to stop either.
Now, there has been a time
– you're right.
There was a time in the 80s when there was apathy, when they were bad year after year. And the Silverdome
they were drawing 7,000. Did he draw 7,000 for the Falcons one game? I remember that.
No, I don't know. They averaged about 40 or 50, so the ballpark was half full. Yeah. That's the only time. Otherwise, people are incredibly loyal to this team.
They really are.
And the loyalty goes both ways. When they love – like the one that guy that keeps on writing us in the mailbag – As a loyal Lion fan, and he's angry at Bob, he calls the F.I. for idiot, and all he's doing is he's got his rose colored glasses on. This is what your team is. Anyway, I thought Patricia going for two was one of the weirdest calls I've ever seen.
Me too.
They're two touchdowns
here.
They score to get within a touchdown, and they go for two. And I tell my wife, I said, this is ridiculous. If they don't get it, now they're going to have to go for two just to tie. And I guess the answer is he didn't trust his team could go toe-to-toe with the Cowboys and want to risk an overtime against them.
Well, they played a tough team yesterday, too. I mean, they did play without their quarterback to begin with. And my advice
– gone for the year, by the way. Stafford's
gone for the year. No question about it. But I mean –
and maybe for his career, by the way.
Listen, I said this last show. He should quit. Retire. Get out. He's got $100 million in the bank. He's got new babies. More babies probably coming. Wife just went through hell with her brain surgery. Life is – how much better can life now be with everybody healthy again and except for his back?
Yeah.
And we don't want to see him go out.
If they told him, the doctor said, you risk a crippling injury.
Right, that's what he said.
If they say these are just bones that will heal and you're okay, he'll play again. So until we really understand what the medical staff is saying, I don't think we can really speculate on that.
You know,
a couple
look
of things
at it,
from the TV broadcast yesterday, guys.
Okay.
If you were watching, they fonted this on the screen. Only three teams in the NFL this year have had a lead in every single game they've played. That would be San Francisco, which I think is now 9-1 after that thrilling comeback yesterday. Kansas City plays Monday night. That was another one. And the third is the FLs, who are now 3-6-1. Those are division leaders, and the FLs are last in the NFC Central.
Yep.
Well, how about that? And then there's another one from the TV screen. I'm sure that you noted this. They ran a highlight coming out of a break from 1991 –
yeah.
Barry Sanders with a great long touchdown
against
run
the Cowboys.
In the playoffs to beat Dallas
38-6.
Yeah, 38
to 6.
Yeah.
You can't beat them 38-39. You just read something wrong.
Oh, no, 38-9 is what I had. I'm sorry.
38-6, okay. Wrong,
that's okay.
But then right after that, they said, to remind us, this was the only playoff win the Detroit Lions have had in the Super Bowl era.
Well,
going back to the mid-60s.
Well, it goes back to 1957 since they played for a title. That's why we had 60,000 people listen to our Wayne Font show. He has gone from the big buck who kind of got chased out of town to the greatest coach in Lions history.
You got a guy who's leading the NFL in touchdown receptions with 8, Galladay. They don't even throw to him.
I know.
Zero catches in the first half, targeted once, and he still had zero catches going into the fourth quarter of this game.
Yep.
What the hell is going on?
Here's an amazing figure. With his bad back, and Lord knows they talked about this bad back last year, and of course this year too,
He still has completed 65% of his passes.
Stafford.
And my question is, what would happen if he was really on a team that could play?
That's a great question.
Is he as good as we think
he is? I think Stafford's one of the top 10 in the league.
Oh, I do too.
You know, I think he can take a team to a Super Bowl. It's interesting here. So, you know, I don't pretend to know. I'm not sophisticated enough in analyzing football that Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn are building a particular type of team and that they're gathering the right players for this. And once they get them, they'll be good. I don't know that. But Quinn, since he fired Caldwell a few years ago, was 9-16 as the general manager since Caldwell left because 9-7 wasn't good enough. So I think those two will be back for sure. They'll be back next year. But I don't know, is Patricia the real thing, or is he just another pretender that played for Belichick or coach for Belichick, and that's about it?
This looks like the next segment's coming up, doesn't it? I mean, it really does. 9-16. We haven't won in how many years? 112? Civil War time?
Only 62.
Only 62. But, I'm
63
sorry,
counting this one.
I mean, but it makes no sense. Fellas, you got to win one year.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Now for the most important part of this,
What's that?
You know, I'm here to tell you that the Lions could have won that game yesterday. And when you think about it, they probably should have won that game. And they could have won that game, if only. Now put this in your pipe and smoke it. 10:30 left in the fourth quarter. FL's trailing only 27-21. Darius Slay blows his second INT.
Right through his hands.
Yeah. It would have been a pick six to put the FLs ahead. Instead, Amari Cooper catches the ball behind Slay.
What an unbelievable play that was.
And a two-point conversion. So it's 35-21, Dallas, instead. Game, set, and match. And then the tight TV replay shows Darius Slay with a big smile on his face actually slapping skin with Amari Cooper.
Do you realize the concentration he must have had to catch that ball?
Oh, Cooper, it's amazing.
I just couldn't believe it. He didn't catch that ball. And then I thought he was out of bounds, which he wasn't. But what a catch.
Well, it never touched his hands. That's why Edelman dropped one later. That's amazing.
It was as great a catch as I've ever seen.
What happens to the FLs now? Where do they go? Next game.
Where are they? I don't know. Where are they going?
Now you don't know.
Oh, they're going bad.
This coming week are at Washington against the Redskins. The venerable Tom Boswell, writing in the Washington Post this morning, reports that Skins fans, among the most loyal anywhere, have finally had enough of bungling little Dan Snyder and his
because the Jets beat him yesterday, right? The Jets blew him out.
The ticks for Sunday's crummy game of the week, the 1-9 Skins versus the 2-7 Jets, were going for as little as $9 on the secondary market. Uh-huh. Jets blew him out 31-17. Fellas, can you imagine?
Yes.
You know where I'm going with this. Can you imagine if this Sunday, what if the Lions lose to the Washington Redskins?
Let me ask you a question. Do you remember? Listen.
Well, it's a road game, Bob. Hey, it could be tough.
Little guy, what? You remember the last time we were in Washington together?
Yes.
What happened?
They got blown out by that was a 91 NFC championship game. So
somebody asked me the other day, because, again, we have this problem with lag time when we record our shows, the things that occur almost immediately after we're done. Boy, I can't wait to hear what you guys are going to say about the Brown-Steelers fight Thursday night.
Ooh, yeah, let's talk about that.
You want to talk about that really? What else can we add that nobody else has said?
Well, I think, first of all, if they don't do something dramatic besides just suspending him for the rest of the season, I got a hunch that the guy he hit with the helmet, the quarterback, he should go to the cops.
No. Because by the way, Mason Rudolph is his name.
Yeah.
And you know when I went to that game at Pitt, you know, a couple of weeks ago I went to the Pitt-Miami game? Yeah. Well, the Steelers and the University of Pittsburgh share the same practice facility, which is a big boost to Pitt because – the players that come there, they can interact with Steelers during the day, which gives them a sense of what the pros are like. Sure. That's a big selling point. We're walking from the towards the practice field. He's kind of showing us around, and Mason Rudolph walks out, talking to the offensive coordinator, my pal, and the nicest kid, big kid, but you know, just a real polite. a bright kid. And then you see what happens to players once the whistle blows.
That's right.
They are very, very different. Now, Rudolph was pulling the face, trying to pull the helmet off. Garrett then responded by pulling his off. And I tell you, if he had hit him with the top of the helmet, of the helmet is like a rock.
Yep.
So it turns out he hit him with kind of the side where the chin strap is.
But he's perfectly fine. He's not going to go to court and sue.
No, he's not. No, because he knows that he's culpable too, and that would come up. But you know, that wasn't the biggest hit in the game. Brandon and I were talking about there was a helmet-to-helmet hit where the guy's face was – his ear was bleeding.
That was a tackle.
Right. So, in other words, between the whistles, you're allowed to do all kinds of violence.
Absolutely.
That was not the worst violence in the game. So, it's very tough to legislate, and I think Garrett should not be punished beyond what they've done this year. I really don't think it's beyond that. He's a decent kid. He's had some other penalties. He's a number one pick.
He's
great
a very
player.
Bright kid.
Bright kid
and a true student as well in college.
These are savages. When the whistle blows, they have to be savage to play the game. And look how silly. Now, I'm not defending it, but a guy will run out of bounds, and he'll be 1 foot out of bounds, and somebody gives him a little shove, 15-yard penalty, with no violence inflicted.
Right.
So it's not, to me, I think we should stop the moralizing. It's not the most violent thing in football, nor the most violent thing in that game even. So that's my
thoughts on Eli, that. On that subject, I'm sure you remember Will Harris, the Lions defensive back, had a vicious helmet-on-helmet hit against Randall Cobb.
On touchdown play, yes. Yeah.
Now, in college football, Harris would have been ejected and suspended for half the next game.
Right.
But the NFL does not police this helmet-to-helmet stuff other than issuing retroactive fines, as well as I think they do in college football.
Well, both of these players, either two or three of the players have appearances this week with the league office, Tuesday and Wednesday, I guess.
That.
And then all hell will break loose after that.
Hey, fellas, another very big story. I'm just going to sit back and listen to you two guys now. Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Oh, boy. Ooh, boy.
I was very disappointed in Colin Kaepernick.
I'll ask you a question. Who the hell does he think he is?
I just think he went way too far. Listen, it's not a perfect league. Antonio Brown accused them of racism. I'm not going to call them racist, but it's the league, and they run the show. And this was there were elements of the setup of the tryout that bothered Kaepernick. But I mean, what's the waiver? It was the waiver, an injury waiver. How's he going to get hurt there? So he fought them on everything, and he really shot himself in the foot to try and be, take a moral, ethical stance here. Instead, he only had eight people watch him by moving it to the other venue.
Right,
now, he wanted the media to be there, which was reasonable. He probably could have negotiated that. But the video, I mean, they're going to show the video. They wanted him to get a job, I think. Jay-Z was there, and he went out of his way to make it harder to get a job, and now he's going to get no offers, and he's culpable now for blowing it. He should have played.
Remember, Eli, that video we all saw was shot by Kaepernick's own team.
Nike.
He sure looked good to me. They didn't show him missing passes by 6 yards, as he obviously must have
that
in a
was,
workout like
by
that.
The way,
he had 53
Bob,
of the
Eli,
60 passes.
He completed almost
Of course, there's
every
no
pass.
Defenders, but yeah.
But the thing about it is the crew was paid for by Nike. The film crew.
Mm-hmm.
Nike picked up the whole tab. Listen, he got approximately $10 million, they said, to settle the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're talking about he's bringing another big one if nobody comes and sees him and allows him to give him a contract.
Shouldn't do that.
I do not think the NFL could be so blind not to offer him something. Even if it's a bad deal, even if it's a bad offer, offer him something. You want to get him? Listen.
I don't know. At this point, not, Denny, if and,
I,
and listen,
I
supported him all the way
Me
through.
Me too. Both
and,
of
and
us
And the reason I supported him was, even though the kneeling was what you could question what type of an approach that was, it was not to disrespect the military. That's how it was spun.
Right.
By certain people in politics. And so I agreed with him then. He's trying to embarrass. He tried to embarrass the NFL the other
day.
Goes from 25 teams to 8, and I was with him until that. And I think he blew it. And now, if nobody hires him, it's his fault. You can't put it on the NFL.
And keep this in mind: the NFL is a privilege. It's not something in life that we're guaranteed. Nobody wants a personality of a nuisance, and he is a nuisance. He's got way too much baggage now. And his original thought was he was going to protest social injustice. Well, he blew it because now he's made it all about him. You agree, Bob?
And here's what he said. Here's what he said afterwards, which is still kind of reeks of a bit of arrogance.
We appreciate what y'all do. We appreciate the work you do for the people and telling the truth. That's what we want in everything. I've been ready for 3 years. I've been denied for 3 years. We all know why I came out here, showed it today in front of everybody. We have nothing to hide. So we're waiting for the 32 owners, the 32 teams, Roger Goodell, all of them to stop running. Stop running from the truth. Stop running from the people.
In other words, he's thanking the media for being there and the truth. He says, I'm ready. Let's hear from you now. And, you know, he ruined his chances by at least three times by moving it an hour away. And the other 18 teams that were going to be there, 17 or 18 teams, couldn't make it to the other location. So it's a shame. I'm sorry that he did that because Jay-Z and Goodell gave him a chance. The NFL isn't perfect. And maybe there were things a little stacked against him or he didn't get to negotiate it the way he wanted. He should have gone through with it and seen what happened.
And by the way, the NFL is giving a copy of the video to all of the teams today. Uh-huh. So at least they're all going to see how he threw. And they said he was throwing missiles, by the way. They said he was still throwing the ball as hard as ever.
Misguided response on his part.
Terrible.
I think.
Yeah. Since Denny asked me, I'll say a couple of things about this. First of all, if you look at this kid, Jeff Driscoll, who's been playing quarterback for the FL's last couple of games.
He did a good job.
Not Driscoll, Driscoll.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. So anyway, I think the kid does. Yeah, Denny, I think the kid has looked actually pretty good.
I do too.
But with Stafford's season out, done with, and his future up in the air, how come the FLs wouldn't take a chance on Kaepernick?
They went there
for a private workout.
They were one of the right. And by the way, Nally, Kaepernick's agent, says he doesn't anticipate, and he says, I hope so, but I don't know. You know, the waiver to me is so standard, but maybe there was something more there because the executive said or the agent said, when we got that waiver, we were like, we see that it's the employment rights. You want him to forfeit his employment rights. I don't know what that means.
If that's true that he was, if that's true that he's waiving everything in the employment contract, that's, first of all, it's illegal. You can't do that. And number two, you can't do something for him that you can't do for other players or not allow for other players.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they probably stepped in it again as well as he did, but I'll tell you, I wouldn't want a guy on my team like this.
Listen,
not like this.
It wasn't about the money for him. He's got enough money, so the waiver and the employment rights, I'm not sure what that was, but he shouldn't have fought him on that. And the NFL, listen, you know, when Nike made the spot, they made it because there's a lot of people, especially African-Americans, which is a large part of their audience, and the kids, like Kaepernick. And they would like him to not be a victim anymore. They would like him to not be a martyr anymore.
Right, absolutely.
He had a chance here, and I'm just still shocked that he hurt himself that badly.
And then the other point I was going to make about Colin Kaepernick, I think we've utterly exhausted this subject.
Now, well, I don't know if you can ever – wait a minute, football. Bob. I don't think you can ever I don't think you can ever ignore – what's happened here? You're talking about a professional.
Well, of course, and we didn't.
With blackball. He's been blackballed. That's what he has been.
No question. And that's, and you look at the collusion money that Jack Morris and Lance Parrish and those guys got years ago.
Right.
Collusion here. Obviously collusion.
Anyway, we're going to talk to Keith Nichols shortly.
I got one more football note for you. Well, to Keith.
Can I close on this
and lead you to the break?
Listen, Go ahead.
I know that you and all of your fellow Michigan alums are justifiably proud of Saturday's ridiculous shellacking of Michigan State. But you're also justifiably proud of graduating from one of the outstanding universities in the world. And I know that you all will be equally proud of this from Phil Mushnick's column Sunday in the New York Post. And I quote Mushnick, Giants defensive back Jabril Peppers, a three-year full scholarship enrollee at academically demanding Michigan, after the Giants lost to the Jets, said, quote, I ain't really care about how you all feel or how nobody feel. University of Michigan graduate, a college man.
Did he graduate or did he graduate? He didn't graduate.
Well,
did he?
I presume he did. I don't know about that.
He
stayed eligible, let's put it that way, at Michigan.
Well, he wasn't in my English classes. But anyway, I also want, and after the break, I want Denny to talk about about the Polish rifle in Chicago that seems to have let him down one final time. Hey, from the power and luxury of Navigator.
Oh, man, don't go there already.
To the whisper silent interior, the brand new Corsair crossover. Hoot McInerney's lineup of Lincoln SUVs is as good as it gets. Lincoln SUV sales up over 20% this year, thanks also to two other stunning new entries, the Aviator and, of course, my Nautilus.
Oh, it's
gorgeous. I love my new Nautilus for the comfort. In fact, every time we leave the studio here, Denny says, "Man, that is a beautiful car."
I really do. As I'm coming down to the studio, every time we come down here, the first thing I look for is that car.
And he says, "You know, if we can really make this show successful, I'll be able to afford one of those
when
I grow up." Yes. Anyway, I've been loyal to Hoot McInerney's great family business, Star Lincoln, since I met Hoot, delayed auto icon, way back in the 70s. And his family carries on the tradition of luxury, spotless dealership, and the renowned Star treatment. That's why a lot of Lincoln owners come from other dealerships over to Star, because of the way you get treated. All the technology, I'm not going to get into it with these new SUVs, but it is fantastic. So come see the latest lineup or buy online with the effortless ownership experience at starlincoln.com. Order your model features, color, then just roll in, pick it up. Hoot McInerney, Star Lincoln, of course, at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And Luke Nowacki, our loyal sponsor of all the Red Shovel shows, has worked with individuals, families, business owners to help them gain clarity about their financial situation and peace of mind about the future. It's about peace of mind. You need to know that your life is protected, your assets are protected, and they're going to grow so you can cover the expenses you need either with your family or in retirement. The number is 248-663-4748. See what hundreds of others have gone to with Luke, where you get a complimentary consultation, answers all your questions. He'll create a plan to help you reach your financial goals. Again, 248-663-4748. Advisory service off through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, product services referenced here, independent, Royal Alliance Associates. And you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Coming up shortly, in about 10 minutes, is Keith Nichol, fine quarterback and wide receiver for Michigan State. Talk about where the Spartans are
now.
How
about we go to Denny's favorite subject right now, which is baseball, of course.
Okay.
And I want to tell you, Watertown, New York is a small town about 2 hours away from Rochester and north of Syracuse, about the same distance. It's there that former Tiger John Walkenfuss lives.
Yep.
Now 70 years old, Fuss is suffering from Alzheimer's disease, according to a big piece in the local newspaper there. Ironically, and I think a lot of you people know this already, he turned out to be a big key in the Tigers' 84 championship, though he wasn't even on that club.
Traded.
Mid-March, just before the season started, Fuss noted that he would be happy to be traded to Philadelphia, which is just a 50-minute drive from where he was living at the time, Wilmington, Delaware. He also drew big criticism with further public complaints, and he was always complaining about money and stuff like spending a lot of money. He was making $200,000 at the time, getting limited playing time, and the high salaries being paid to, remember when he said this, unnamed, quote, clowns among his teammates on the Tigers?
Yeah.
So the Tigers had heard enough at that point in time, and they traded Walkenfuss and Glenn Wilson, a personal favorite of mine, to the Phillies for Willie Hernandez and Dave Bergman.
Now, Bergman came in. Bergman had been traded to Philly from San Francisco.
Giants.
Right.
Yeah.
But the reason that trade happened, as it was revealed in my award-winning book, 84, The Last of the Great Tigers, is that Sparky, after doing the 83 World Series that the Phillies played in on national TV, the radio, the Phillies closer was Al Holland. And Willie Hernandez hated
Al Holland
with a passion, because Al Holland got all the credit and Willie would sometimes set him up.
Right.
And Holland never gave him any credit at all. And so Sparky would leave, and because he saw Hernandez, we could use this guy. He knew he needed him. He would leave notes under Billy LaJoy's door, get this guy, and bothered him so much that LaJoy went through and made the deal. So Sparky was, he was smart.
Of course.
Very, very smart.
He had a lot of stuff.
You know, and I see all these guys, a lot of guys used to complain about the money back then. I just want to throw something for the
record. They still do today, by the way.
They still do today. $30 million is not enough. When I played, and played about 10 and a half years, in my entire career, and I had to argue for every dime that I got, in 10 and a half years, I made $444,000 in 10 years. Think of it, $44,000 a year. And I'm not complaining. I never complained publicly, except when I slammed Campbell's door the one time.
By the way, if you hear some noise in the background here, Drew is getting his furnace replaced.
That's a good thing.
So I don't hear it anyway.
No, unlike radio, where you're supposed to be in a pristine studio, there can be ambient noise during.
And I have a question. What city is he in, Walkenfuss?
He's in Watertown, New York.
How close is that to Albany? I'm going to be in Albany.
It's pretty north.
Yeah, I would think it's probably at least 3 hours, yeah, 3.5 hours. New York State's from Albany. You're going to be in Albany?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Albany.
State capital. Yeah, good. Yeah, that's going to make you talk some sense into our New York legislators when you're there. Okay, that would be nice.
I'll tell you what. You make the appointment. I'll show up.
Okay, back to Fuss. Yes,
I mean, I liked him as far as he went.
Who's Tim?
But I never thought he was particularly friendly. Did you? What did you think?
I was okay with Fuss.
Danny, did you know him at
all?
Yeah,
I knew him. I thought he was a pretty good guy.
I mean, I like Fuss.
Yeah, he always had time to talk to me whenever I, got down on a bench once in a while. He would say, you know, sit down and what do you think of this guy? What do you think of this guy? And
we had him at an event that I hosted. In fact, we talked about it with Alan Trammell when Jack Morris was going to tear up when I asked him about his 84 teammates. And Fuss was a guest there. And he said to me beforehand, you know, I just don't really want to talk. Don't ask me any questions. So I said, really? He said, yeah, don't. And so as the thing was going on, Dave Bergman, the host of the event, said, you know, said, ask him a question. He's sitting in the audience. So I asked him a question, and Fuss was actually quite good. He's a shy guy in a certain way, but he had the crazy stance, that crazy batting stance, the close stance. Never forget that, huh?
We also have him in the Detroit News this weekend. Movie critic Adam Graham wrote a feature on Tiger Town, a 1983 Disney Channel original movie about a young boy who wills the down-and-out Detroit Tigers to the American League pennant. Written and produced by Detroit native Alan Shapiro, grew up a huge Tigers fan, especially of Denny and Denny's 68 team. So the reason this is in the news is they're trying to get this movie placed on some other Disney service now and having trouble for whatever reason. Roy Scheider starred in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'm reading this stuff. I saw this stuff. They filmed it in Tiger Stadium when the Tigers went a long road trip in 1983. I've never heard of this.
I'd heard about it. I never saw it.
I think so.
Do you remember that?
I vaguely remember something with Roy Scheider in it. I do remember that part. I don't remember the nature of the movie, though. Yeah.
I didn't see it, that's for sure.
Anyway, I think we can move on to the mailbag. We could quickly mention
the mailbag. I don't think so, because Bob, I got a couple more baseball notes.
Okay, Bob, go ahead.
As usual, and part of the mailbag features Eli's ants in his pants, by the way, I must tell you.
Ants in his pants.
Constantly.
Well, we're calling.
Last week, back-to-back Cy Young winner Denny McClain continued to have a veritable field day with Jacob DeGrom having won two straight Cy Youngs.
Where are you reading this?
A New York Post reader wrote in Friday to the paper, and I quote, "Wow, how old school! A 21-game winner wins the National League Cy Young." Of course, the 21 victories came over two seasons.
No kidding. Wow, good for that.
Also, if you're with us in the last show, you heard Anthony's Pants Eli having a conniption because Denny mentioned Tony Cuccinello's name and remembering him from my own boyhood baseball cards when he was a coach for the White Sox, I then had the temerity to ask Denny what Tony was like. I wanted to know. Listener C. Michael Raymond responded to this exchange on Twitter, quote, "Personally, I have no issue hearing dialogue about Don Gutteridge and Tony Cuccinello, despite what Eli says." And Mr. Z, just so you know, Tony Cuccinello led the National League second baseman in assists and double plays three times, hit 300 or better five times, with a career high 315 in 1931. He was selected for MLB's first All-Star game, and you know all about that, 1933.
Fine. You know
and
what?
He pinch hit for Carl Hubbell in the ninth inning after Hubbell performed one of the greatest feats in baseball.
Struck out the
history,
first five guys. Yeah.
Okay. Striking out five consecutive legendary Hall of Famers. Babe Ruth, Gehrig, Fox, Simmons, and Cronin. Okay. Go ahead.
Now you've tripled how much I wanted to hear about Tony Cuccinello, which was.
Well, wait a second. I got one quickie on Cuccinello. Listen, this is serious. When I was just graduated from high school, I think that's my shoulder being put back wherever.
Hurry up,
we're
running. Go ahead.
When I signed my contract, my first contract coming out of high school, one of the guys in my living room that day, Minnie Minoso, the president of the Chicago White Sox, and Tony Cuccinello and Nellie Fox.
Wow.
They were in, and that's how
Minnie Minoso.
Yeah, Minnie Minoso.
Are we in the mailbag or are we just doing preliminary mailbag?
Yesterday, you got time to the mailbag?
Well, before we do that, because we're short on time, there was one thing I did want to talk about in the football note that I forgot, and that is this pass interference thing we've talked about.
Oh, it's terrible.
This is a classic example in the Houston Baltimore game where what was it? What are the names of the guys? It was Humphrey and DeAndre Hopkins. A blatant pass interference that was reviewed and was not changed. And the absurdity of it is that everybody agreed it had to be pass interference. Here is what Bill O'Brien, the Houston coach, said about it afterwards.
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea what pass interference is anymore. No idea.
Basically, I didn't even know what pass interference is. And now I want to give you an on and on it goes there. Only 10% of the calls have been overturned.
Yeah.
As blatant as they are, it should be at least 50%. And you want to talk about Trubisky, right?
No, I hate him. I want to talk about the penalties for a second.
Hey,
for this pass interference. Wait a minute, Bob.
Your pass against the Giants, Denny.
Wait a second. I want to talk about these penalties. It appears to me that nobody knows what they are anymore. Absolutely, nobody's got a chance. And you're right, because almost every one, nobody ever wins one.
Because this is the reason it didn't used to be this way. Hand checking is allowed.
Right.
You're allowed to grab the guy.
Yes.
So it's how much did you? This is again, we talk about the vagueness of the rules. The technology is perfect. The rules are imperfect. So how much hand grabbing are you allowed to do? How much, you know? It's,
actually, it depends upon what age you are.
Okay, we have to say goodbye. Okay, how old I am? We have to say goodbye to our radio listeners, WCWA and at WDFN. We do have Keith Nichol coming up in moments after the mailbag. You have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, Bob, this is perfect.
All right, here we go.
You've got 4 minutes.
Some people are still talking about our vociferous debate recently, pitting Danny and Eli, ganging up on me shamelessly about the ridiculous salaries in baseball and what they now mean to the average fan. So here's a friend of Denny's, actually, who sends this in under the heading, "Thank you for your Tigers ticket order." Gentlemen, on Monday's show, your discussion about how it costs to take a family of four to a Tigers game was interesting. Please see the invoice I forwarded to you. He actually did do this. And note when I purchased the tickets. So he went to an August game last year, paid for the tickets for his family, then $25 to park outside Comerica, $80 in concessions. He says only one beer. Since they grabbed dinner at the concession stands, he had dinner, quotes is about right. So this cost your friend Jerry Eversman from Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah, I know.
This cost him over $400 to take his family of four to see one of 162 baseball games. And he adds a team that was really poor as well. Love the show from Jerry.
I think Jerry's a cop, too.
Well, whatever.
He decided
to spend the money. And if you decide to spend the money, don't bitch about it afterwards.
Here's what he said.
Well, that's not nice to say.
It's the truth. What do you mean? What do you mean?
That's not nice to say.
He knew what it cost. He knew what the team was. He can look in the paper, see what the standings are. He still decided to go.
He's telling you that it's a little more expensive than what he really wanted to spend.
Okay.
He had to spend it because he had his kids and everybody with him.
Next!
Now, Mr. Eversman hastens to add, he lives in Toledo, the Mud Hens are a much better value, cost
sure
a little over $100 to take a family of four. You guys have been to games down in Toledo.
Terrific.
That's a beautiful AAA stadium.
It is, gorgeous,
$12, you can sit right behind home plate and watch the pitcher. So that's an alternative.
So it's not the major leagues.
But the only problem is not the major leagues.
Keep going.
Now, Dennis Hyde writes, remember this? How about this? This is a guy who just really hates me, you know, and he tries to write into the show, and sometimes he's so vociferous and angry.
Bob,
we don't read it.
He's not alone. You're going to say
Bob,
he's not alone?
He's not alone.
Go ahead.
Yes, that's probably true, and I accept that mantle and wear it proudly.
Go ahead.
So Dennis Hyde writes, I just want to be clear because I feel bad. I don't care for Bob on the show, his lion hatred. But if I met him in person, Bob could be my favorite person to talk to.
Sure.
No hard feelings is what I'm saying. Stop complete hatred of the Lions and all is well. I've heard it my entire life. I won't give up on my kids, and I won't give up on a Lions Super Bowl before I die. I'm 46 now, so I will see it. Love the damn show. I can't stop listening just because Bob's on it. And he may be growing on me, actually. Well, Dennis, I merely matriculated at Moo U, so I am no Rhodes Scholar. But I calculate that if you're in shape at age 46, you've taken care of yourself, you could easily live another 50 years till age 96.
So no, Dennis, you will never see an NFL Super Bowl title in your lifetime.
That will be a 2070. Would mean it'll be 113 years since they're 117 years. Okay, go ahead. Next.
Freddie the Pizza Man back with us again.
All right. Writes,
Matt Patricia is the rocket scientist, and Bob Quinn is the smartest man in the room. What a duo. Just might be the worst duo in all of sports. And both inherited a franchise quarterback. London Lions has a ring to it. Shame, shame, shame on you, Freddie. You're a Detroit native who's a little older, and you believe this FL's duo is worse than GM Russ Thomas and head coach Tommy Hudspeth? Really?
Hey, how did we wind up with two clubs that are dead last?
The other one.
And everything
the Wings?
Do, the Tigers.
Oh, the Tigers.
Oh, my God, I forgot about the Wings. I was still giving them
they're
the
doing a little bit better. They're actually 4-4-2 in their last 10. Bob, one more.
I don't know about – no, I got a couple more. Thanks, sir. I don't know about the English. You talk about the London Lions. But I did reach out to the mayor of London, Ontario, just this morning. He told me they don't want the FLs either.
Right, you got another 2 minutes because we're going to go call Keith Nichol in 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Me. Fellas, another great interview. Jay Vincent was open, candid, and entertaining. I loved his honesty with the three of you. Speaking of open, candid, and honest, your discussion earlier in the show on Charles Rogers and Zachary Winston was so good. And the honesty and openness of Denny with his own past personally, and both Eli and Denny discussing the tragic losses of their daughters, just shows how real your show is. I love your show, guys. Keep plugging away. That's from Jimmy. Here's Christopher Fitzpatrick, who listens in San Luis Obispo, California. Ever been there, folks?
Yes, sir.
Oh, it's beautiful. So Christopher writes, I've written to you before, but had to again after listening to your interview with John Wangler. Through my friendship with my U of M track teammate, David Hall, and you know, of course, he was a Michigan quarterback as well. Through my friendship, I've been acquainted with Wangs for years. I have never heard that story about Wangler almost quitting the football team to play basketball for Johnny Orr. What a great interview leading up to the U of M-MSU games. You guys are on a roll with your guests as of late. As frustrating as Bob is with his brash comments, and Denny is with his non sequiturs, your show has become a must-listen I look forward to twice a week. And Eli, thanks for herding these two guys in.
Very nice. And by the way, the phone number, now that Bob's done with the mailbag.
Phone number.
760-89-BALLS, 760-89-BALLS for a text or a voicemail, or you can email us at asknofilter@gmail.com. Okay, we're calling Keith Nichol in 60 seconds. You can get a quick one in here. Go ahead.
Good. Then put him on hold for about 3 minutes.
No, he's busy. He's got stuff.
I'm going to add this one right here, and I'll get back to some of this mail stuff later. Okay. I just want to say that our regular listener, Jeff Schroat, actually wrote in, quote, all the parts of the show that have Eli cringing, the old school references, the marathon mailbags, putting them up tight, so on and so forth, they all have me LOLing. So let them laugh at you, Eli. It's just fine. Let's go to Keith Nichol, then we'll do more of the mailbag if we may. And I got more stories, too.
You can save them for later. We'll do them after Keith. You can drone on all afternoon if you'd like. Well, Keith Nichol from Lowell, Michigan, went to Oklahoma to play quarterback, but Sam Bradford was there, went on to win the Heisman Trophy. Came back to Michigan State, near where he grew up in Lowell, though it's out near Grand Rapids. And who's here but Kirk Cousins, who's an NFL star. He switched to wide receiver. What a great career he had. In a bowl game against Texas Tech, he caught a couple of passes and ran for a touchdown. And in the Capital One Bowl versus Alabama, this is great, in 2011, threw a 49-yard touchdown pass and also had three catches. But this play against Wisconsin that gave Michigan a share of the Big Ten championship, propelled him to the Big Ten title game. The Hail Mary is what Keith Nichols' legacy is at Michigan State.
Cousins, on the last play of regulation, chucks it to the end zone. Caught. Michigan State's caught it on a rebound. Hold on. It is just short of the end zone. Instant replay. We'll take a look at this. Ball was caught by Keith Nichol.
After further review, the runner did cross the line.
Place went nuts.
Yeah. And obviously, Keith did a lot more than that play. But thanks for joining us, Keith. And I guess you got to go over it, because I think what people may forget is how you had to fight three huge Wisconsin defenders to get into the end zone. I'm sure people still ask you about it today. Tell us about it.
Yeah, no, it's, when you're playing and you're in the moment, even after the game, you don't realize the impact some of those games or moments have on other people. But I get approached or we at least discuss that game at least weekly with individuals, and those individuals are always talking about how much fun and excitement they had, and whether that was their first family's game or where they were when that game happened, or if the few bets were won because of that catch and things like that. So people have a lot of fun, and it's a great memory, and it's hard to believe it's already maybe, what, 8 years?
Eight years ago
now. Time certainly flown by. So, but a great memory, and I was glad to be a part of it.
And people forget, Keith, that that ball was blown dead inside the one-yard line. They only decided after looking at the instant replay that you had, in fact, broken the plane. And I think a lot of Wisconsin fans to this day feel you still didn't get into the end zone.
You know, people like some of my friends like to tease me and bust me up and say, you know, I don't know if you ever really got across the line. But I always go back and I say, hey, the eye in the sky never lies. So the instant replay showed very – closely that the ball barely crossed the line there.
I agree with that. Yeah, I thought the ball clearly crossed the line.
I do too. Let me go back to the beginning. When you wound up at Oklahoma, had you already committed to MSU?
Yeah, so kind of an interesting story with Michigan State.
Please.
I had committed to Michigan State prior to my junior year of high school starting. John L. Smith was a quarterback there, or the coach there. Drew Stanton was a quarterback, and they ran a spread offense, very similar to what I did in high school, and I wanted to be the next Drew Stanton, and what better place to do that than in your own home state? So I committed to them. Now they've, of course, fired John L. Smith, and I was graduating early to go play for them. Well, now they don't have a head coach, and so that kind of reopened the recruitment, if you will. Coach Izzo was actually kind of the figurehead of the you know, the university, really, but then also kind of stepped in as the interim kind of recruiting and on the football team. And he was at a bunch of my high school games and visited my high school and all those kind of things. And that was awesome to see because he's a legend and still is. So people thought that was pretty cool. But bottom line is, it reopened my recruitment. And, you know, Oklahoma's at my house, and this is when they were winning every game, sending people to the NFL, you know, Heisman Trophy winners. Yeah. Adrian Peterson's there, national champions. I mean, the whole thing. I think Coach Stoops and Josh Heupel were in my living room the day after they won the Big 12 title game. So I went down to take a visit to Oklahoma, and it's probably, you know, everything you would imagine it would be. Pretty special place, tons of history and tradition, and special players were there at the time. And so I said, hey, you know what, I want to have an opportunity to play at the next level. I don't have a head coach to go play for at Michigan State right now. And so I took the leap to Oklahoma. And it was a great experience, a lot of great friendships and relationships that came out of that, and something I really value.
Well, as you know, they're called the Sooners, and I always thought it had something to do with the song, Sooner or Later the Cheerleaders Are Going to Get You.
I don't know what that was.
Oh, man.
Then you go back to Michigan State after a year at Oklahoma because you want to start a quarterback for the Spartans and fulfill your childhood dream, except you're not as good as Kirk Cousins, and he beats you out. What was that like for you? Did you think
your
about leaving
bit.
Again after
yeah.
that?
Yeah, so it was interesting. You know, at Oklahoma, if I were to go back to that for 2 seconds, you know, my playing style in high school and even college, of course, I was a dual threat quarterback. So I would run a lot out of shotgun, move around a lot, and being very transparent, I think I played in like three or six games at Oklahoma. I didn't redshirt. And Sam Bradford was perfect for that offense. You know, would sit in the pocket, dump the ball down to great athletes, very accurate, perfect for him. And I recognized that. So even my talent, you know, being able to run around wasn't really able to be optimized because of the talent we already had on the field. Wasn't really needed. And then at Michigan State, much more pro-style offense at the time. You know, I played in 6 games, didn't get redshirted, of course. Started a couple games. Ended up dislocating my elbow against Illinois, which I actually kept under the radar on purpose to protect my team so that they'd have to, you know, account for me and Kirk going into those games. And, you know, then, of course, I couldn't play for 3 or 4 games there. And Kirk did a great job and kind of taking over that role. Led us to a lot of great wins and in a promising direction. And he's, of course, a fantastic NFL talent as well. And Michigan State said, hey, listen, we got Kirk at quarterback now. He's doing great, but we need help and talent at wide receiver. You know, fortunate enough for me, I had the athletic ability to move positions. I knew the offense well enough transition happened pretty quick. And I've jumped into that fully and gave it everything I had because all I wanted to do was win football games and be a part of those things. And so it was a really unique experience. And, you know, I always kind of think to myself, you know, how many guys say they get to start at, you know, two positions at the Division I level and sustain the playing time there. So it's really cool to spend time playing.
I see this Julian Edelman, who was a quarterback at Kent, and he's an amazing wide receiver in the NFL. And I'm really impressed because they're very different positions, totally different skills. Had you played receiver before? To make that transition just seems amazing. So what was your experience to do that?
Yeah, you know, I never played wide receiver before growing up, but I did start as a corner my senior year of high school. And so I had some familiarity with being on the perimeter, if you will, and, you know, becoming into what, you know, more of an athletic position. But the benefits from quarterback were that you just, one, I knew where to line up. I understood every position and every formation, so that was very helpful.
Yep.
And I also understood what Kirk was thinking the whole time, you know, because I'd been in that seat. So in a lot of ways, I was able to really help, I think, and just kind of click with Kirk relatively quickly to understand, hey, there's a blitz coming. Probably going to want a guy to get his head around even quicker than normally discussed. But just be open for him, turn your chest to him, make things easy, point things out. I also took a lot of pride in being physical on the perimeter because as a quarterback, what you see a lot of times is how close a run game or how close a run can really be to getting into, for instead of a 3 or 5 yard run, into a 10, 15, 20, or even a touchdown. So I took a lot of pride in going the extra mile and being physical and blocking on the edge to help us be even better in the run game. And even just those kinds of things and perspectives helped a ton for my, not only my own personal success, but I thought for the success of the team and the offense.
I got to tell you something that happened to me a short time ago. I was talking about athletes, athletic people, and your name came up alongside Mickey Stanley's. Mickey Stanley was one of our center fielders with the Detroit Tigers back in the 60s. He was a hell of a player, all Michigan, everything, football, basketball, baseball. He played everything and could play them all. And that's what they told me about you, that you could play any position on any team. And they were talking about any kind of sport.
I think Eli made a real good and apt comparison between you and Julian Edelman. You were always said to be the best athlete on the entire Michigan State football team. Why didn't you play in the NFL?
You know, it's interesting. It's a very flattering comment when people say that because there were a ton, and there still is a ton, of course, tremendous athletes on our team. You know, at the time, that's when we had, you know, guys like Le'Veon Bell, Darquez Denard, you know, Trey Waynes, who can, you know, faster than lightning, it felt like. So to be recognized as an elite athlete on that team was very flattering. But, you know, as far as the NFL thing went, you know, I don't know if there's a little bit of an identity crisis with the NFL in terms of, you know, I even had some scouts asking, hey, is he a quarterback? Is he a receiver still? Like, can he play quarterback? Can he play safety? And I think what ended up happening is, you know, when it came down to filling roster spots, I think the NFL maybe looked at it like, hey, we can either take a shot on a guy who, you know, again, has a little bit of an identity crisis still,
yeah,
or we just go take a guy who's been playing it his whole life and move on. And, you know, and just I was with the Bears and the Redskins in camp and did tryouts with the Lions, things like that. And my little experience with some of that, I looked at it like, the NFL said, if you're not a first, second, or third round pick, everybody else is just kind of pooled into the same until realized otherwise somehow. And so there is some, I thought, maybe luck of being in the right place at the right time beyond those rounds, if you will, just because of how they kind of vandalize you and break you down because they feel like those talents are very replaceable if you're not a first, second, or third round pick, in my opinion. And I think a guy kind of got pooled into that beyond the third round pick type of talent, and you know, it just did not end up sticking for me there.
You know, we met you, we talked to you last week, obviously before the Michigan State game. Help us out here. When you played, Mark D'Antonio was in the midst of an incredible run. I don't think anybody will deny what he did was beyond anybody's expectations. Those 3 straight years of 11 plus wins, playing for the national championship. How do you explain what's happened and where D'Antonio is today. Is it confusing to you, or is it just something that ran its course? How do you explain it?
You know what? It is a little confusing because, you know, I know what kind of person he is, and I know the type of coach that he is. So I guess the product that's on the field and the scores that are put up on the field do not reflect the type of talent of coach he is and those kinds of things. So that makes it a little confusing. What else I think makes it a little confusing is I remember how he was as a coach and the attitude and the culture in the locker room. But, of course, I'm not there for that now.
Right.
So what's hard for me is I don't know the intricacies of
okay, but does he look like he's done then to you, Keith? Does he look like he's worn out and tired, ready to retire?
You know what?
Tough question.
Interesting, because it's really tough. Has he looked? Listen, I've been around Coach D for a long time.
Yeah,
he works his ass off, and the man he looks tired a lot. So you know, since I've known him, you know, he gets in there at 4:30 in the morning. So you know, to say he looks tired and worn, you know, worn down, and it's time to—I don't believe that. What I believe is, you know, only he's able to look in the mirror and say, you know, how much more do you have in the tank? Because the one thing about this level of play is that you either have to be pushing your pedal through the floorboard or you have no chance because it's already hard enough. And so I think he'd be the one to say, hey, listen, you know, is there any more to do? Is there any more to prove? Is there any more to be done? Because the guy should, he will have a statue be going up. He'll be the most loved coach in Michigan State football history. He's done more for Michigan State football than anybody. And it's just a matter of, you know, does he want to keep going? That's only up to him.
Well, then does the current conditions of the ball club, does that reflect the lack of talent at this point in time? Did something happen with the recruiting for some reason?
Well, you know what's interesting? You know, you look back at some of the classes that we've had. You know, I think there's a 2016 class was a freak show of talent. And if you go back to it, you know, we had Montez Sweat, I think, in that class who went on to be a first-round pick, transferred to Mississippi State because of some drug issues, you know, some things at Michigan State. Ran a 4.41 as a DN, that kind of guy. And now he's starting for, I think, the Redskins or something. Mm-hmm. Donnie Corley, you know, he went through some things off the field. There's a bunch of guys that had some off-field issues but were huge talents. And then, of course, we go, I think, 3-9 in that year. We're missing out on a ton of talent. If you don't have your most talented players on the field, it makes it really hard to lose. And I think there's somewhat of a roller coaster or a snowball effect that kind of comes from those types of things. So a class that we look at to be extremely promising and he'd take us up even to another level after winning the Rose Bowl and doing all these great things, you know, it wasn't there. And, you know, now we're essentially out on a full class, it seems like. So
did the blowout Saturday, Keith, personally embarrass you?
No, I mean, I'll never be embarrassed to be a Spartan. That's number one.
Good for you.
Good for you. I like that. That's great.
To have graduated from that university and to play for Coach D'Antonio. And, you know, I think if – I don't know who has sons on this or who's listening to this, but, you know, if there was a poll on the coaches in the Big Ten around the country – around who you'd want your son to grow up as a man under or to play under.
Wow.
Coach D'Antonio is going to be right at the top of that list, in my opinion. And I think that's the ultimate compliment of a man. It's wins matter, and they definitely matter. That money matters, all those things. But this is a lot about a lot more than just, you know, wins on the balance sheet. And so I'll take him over, you know, he's right at the top tier of all coaches around the country from a balanced perspective.
Well, listen, Talent. Rocket, listen to me. There's one other guy, too.
Rocket, he's called Rocket.
Rockets, I'm going to call you Rocket 7 from now on. I got news for you. There's one other guy that I would call to that attention, too. Another guy that's got to be admired. And I was going through your Wikipedia stuff last night, and it took me 2 days, for God's sakes, to read it. And there are over 140 lines, single space, of stats and highlights of this man's highlights of his life, of his life in the football at MSU. Well, that's the kind of guy we want our kids to be with, too.
Let me ask you this. This is my last question. So what do you take as most valuable of being a college player in East Lansing that you took with you? Now you're a financial advisor. Tell us where you're working. And I suppose being a great Spartan is a benefit to you because many loyalists would want to do business with you. Talk about what you took from East Lansing.
You. Kirk Cousins better have given him a large chunk of change to invest then, right?
I think he's doing all right. You know, I think he's got some money laying around. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, the biggest thing, so what I'm doing now is, you know, I'm running a wealth management tax strategy group. I run my company and my business through Northwestern Mutual's Wealth Management Company. It's a national practice, but I run it out of Troy, Michigan, you know, just a suburb of Detroit. I've been fortunate to work with a lot of executives, business owners, and pro athletes around the country. If I can get my hands around them, I prefer them to be Michigan State Spartans, but I try not to discriminate as much as possible.
Money's money.
I certainly want to focus on the quality of the people too. I think that's one thing I focus on that maybe some don't is, you know, I want to spend my time because it's limited here on earth with really people that I value spending time with. And, you know, it's something I really focus on within our practice. But I think the one thing that I probably took away most from Michigan State and from Coach D'Antonio is, you know, always going through life knowing that nobody's going to give anything to you, to have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder and to have a relentless work ethic and to be comfortable working in the dark, meaning, you know, we say working in the dark at Michigan State. What I mean is, your best moments, your hardest work is going to be done when nobody's watching.
Right.
And, but that's ultimately what gets you the wins and the victories. Yep. And so I think just working hard, just quite honestly, just working harder than everybody else. People say that, but we embody that, I think. And that's what I've probably taken away the most.
My last question to you right now is this. People who know and are close to both Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo say to me that the reason they both have had such big success against Michigan is because privately they hate Michigan. Did you hate Michigan when you played against them? And what was it like to be on the field during those Michigan-Michigan State games for you? A lot of trash talking?
There's a lot of trash talk. And, you know, I think the trash talk actually is much stronger through the first few possessions and quarters. And as the game goes on, you're into a groove and focusing on yourself more so than talking trash. But, you know, listen, I grew up in a household. My mom went to Michigan State. My cousins went to Michigan State. I had a Michigan State flag growing up.
Oh, my God.
You know, I'm from a blue-collar town. And, you know, Michigan State's been in my blood for a long time. So to say I didn't like Michigan is an understatement. you know, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pride that goes on in that game. And you want to beat up those guys. But what's interesting is those games go on too. And, you know, I was with a couple of you guys here last week, you know, I'm sitting there next to John Wengler. John Wengler is one of the greatest Michigan Wolverines of all time, in my opinion. But I love the guy. So just because he went to Michigan doesn't mean I don't dislike him. You actually have, I think what I always had was respect for my opponents, whether I liked them, you know, or not. I always respected my opponents. What I do not appreciate is when people go out of their way to show disrespect, and both sides have been guilty of that. And so that's something I've always just really hated. If I've hated anything, it's the inability to show respect for your opponent.
You know, as a reporter, even though I went to Michigan, I talked to the athletes from both schools, and it became obviously very early on to get to be a Division I player. You got to be an exceptional person in the first place, dedicated and all that. And that's why I said to Bob, I never met a Spartan like you or like Connor Cruz the other day that I didn't like, because you're really from a talent pool. No matter what your personal preferences are, it's remarkable that you get there, that you succeed like you and others did. And when you get to meet the guys, you know that anybody making it to that level is an exceptional person in many ways, including you. And thanks for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, one other thing. We just had John Wangs on, Wengler on. Recently.
Yeah, that was last week. We saw some afterwards.
He's the best. He's actually become a close family friend of mine through my in-laws. And so it's he's as good as it gets.
Well, you take care of yourself. We really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thanks, Keith.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Right. Yep, bye. Right.
Great.
Great talking to Keith Nickel. What a good guy. That's terrific. One of the fun things about doing this show is to talk to young people who you have a lot of regard for. And while we're talking to them, I'm looking at the TV, and Julian Edelman is throwing a touchdown pass last night for the Patriots. It was a great play, and obviously Keith did that in college. Go ahead, finish the mailbag, Bob. Go ahead.
All right. We promised we'd get to just a couple final notes in our mailbag, more about our interview that you guys just brought up with Keith, the John Wengler show from last week. Regular listener Mike Rizzo tweeted, admitted that he thought I was way too tough on Wengler in daring to pump Wangs on the fact that Michigan versus Ohio State is no longer even a rivalry. Mike also tweeted, of course, on Saturday morning, and I quote, "Good luck to all my Spartan followers today. And I mean that very insincerely. Go Blues." You know where he's coming from. On the other hand, Bob Handlin tweeted, "I think it was funny and sad how Eli and Denny were so afraid you were going to upset John Wengler by busting his balls about Michigan's record versus MSU. No filter sports, really? Way to have a set. Let Eli keep throwing the softballs."
Did you feel that? I didn't.
No, not really. But no,
you guys almost shouted me down when I was busting Wangs on losing every year to Ohio State.
Well, let me ask you a question, okay, before you go ahead. Do you think Michigan has a chance to beat them this year, Ohio State, in the final game?
Yes.
I do, too.
Michigan got a shot to beat Ohio State?
Yes, when they play them at home in the final game of the season.
Please, put your house up. Put the house up, and I'll live downstairs.
Okay. All right.
And finally, you know, I'm happy to get this on because we don't do stuff like this very often, and we should do it maybe a little more.
Did Bob say finally?
This is from Steve Powell.
Did Bob say finally? Did you really say finally? Oh, okay. Yes. Now I'm excited. Now I'm getting aroused. Go ahead.
Anyway, so Steve Palusevic tweets, "With so many things you guys have to talk about this Monday morning on No Filter Sports, can this get a few seconds of mention? After almost 30 years of getting beaten by D2 powerhouse Grand Valley State, the Wayne State Warriors finally beat Grand Valley on Saturday." And I'm going to add this because Steve didn't. Grand Valley have been ranked number 19 in America. I mean, you know what a great football program they have there. So Wayne beat them 31-17 on the road at Allendale near Grand Rapids also. Wayne State concludes the regular season with an 8-3 overall record. Mm-hmm. That's the highest win total in eight years. And congratulations to Sickies, no kid on the way up, 61-year-old Paul Winters, the Wayne State head coach.
Congratulations, Mr. Winters.
So, you know, I was totally
hard, Eli, really.
No.
I'm trying to give these guys a break.
You should. I'm sorry. I was so unfamiliar with Michigan because I went to school here. I'd only seen Ann Arbor.
Right.
So I go to this beautiful campus in Ann Arbor, and I drive into Detroit for the first time, and I pass at the corner of I-94 and the Lodge Freeway, the Wayne State Stadium.
Goodness, yeah.
And I go, what a difference. I mean, here you got the belching smokestacks and the two highways coming together. I didn't know much about Wayne State, but it was just a contrast from and Ann Arbor's not even nearly as beautiful as East Lansing, which is an incredible campus. But
really
good
it's
for
cooler,
Wayne State.
It's a cooler college town, though. And Eli, I'll add this to what you just said. This is incredible, I know, but I am, as you know, from the state of Michigan.
Yes.
The first time I ever saw Michigan State University after growing up a wacko Michigan fan was the first day I attended class at Michigan State University. I'm not going up to Michigan State. What do I want to go there for?
Wow.
You know, I'm going to go to Michigan, except I didn't bother to study in high school. So,
neither did I, but I got good grade, better the grades than you.
Yeah, we got Jason Hansen, the former Lions.
Yeah, Jason Hansen on Thursday. We're excited for that.
And by the way, I was working while you guys were screwing around.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again on Thursday. As Jason Hansen will be our guest for another exciting edition of No Filter Sports.
Have a great week.
Thanks, everybody.